this one. There we go.
Okay, well, it is June 11th, and this is the bargaining between the University of Central Florida Board of Trustees and the United Faculty of Florida. And I suppose the first order of business is to present the minutes from our last meeting, which was May 21st, 2019. I'm going to hand you a batch first, and then
could we take out the A on
and
point?
No changes? Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
If you want to be here. All right.
Our I'm watching too many like New York mobster movies. I read that as and no changes.
I like that.
Excuse me, I just mispronounced it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Just reading it in the wrong accent.
I appreciate Brianna's doing it. So, thank you.
All right. So the minutes have been approved with one small grammatical change suggested by Dr. Riley.
It's very unpopular right now.
Okay. And it looks to me like we are down to two articles now, 9 and 24.
Two substantive ones.
Two substantive, well.
30 and 32 are there in the appendices.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you sent us an article 24, which we did look at carefully. I appreciate that, sending it to us in advance.
You.
And yeah. We can hand that out.
Charlie made some additional ones for me. Thank you very much. But on the version that I sent, I was apparently hoping we were already in July, so my date is incorrect.
Is your birthday in July?
It is not. I think I just really, June, it's a lot. I'm already over it.
Make sure our coffee gets to bring in after that.
Yeah.
So we're going to make a correction to the date, so it's 6 instead of 7. Do you need a new coffee or do you
I can get by. Thank you. Now, Jen makes a small change and nobody gets on her case.
Right. She apologized up front.
Okay. Would you like to kind of walk us through the...
So for the most part, we accepted the smaller changes that had already come to us in your recent proposal, and then tried to highlight the areas where there were additional changes to take note of. So the first one on the first page, of course, was something I think had been in discussion a long time before my arrival to the team about retiree emails, and we had had some conversations about just moving that to the Knights domain that already exists, so I don't think that's a very controversial change. On page 2, really relating to some of the bigger changes later, and we can talk about this more substantively. Right now, we understand that phased retirement is an issue that you all care about a lot in terms of having to manage it, and we want to have more conversation about what it looks like to eliminate it. If we are able to agree to some of the other things in here, we're willing to agree to pause it, which I think had originally been offered as one solution this year while we implement this other new program and talk to members more and make sure there's enough education on campus about the options. But we are, of course, hesitant to become the first campus in the state university system to eliminate it without a little bit more information about unintended consequences, I think. So we really do kind of see that level of caution to maybe be beneficial for both sides as we start to look at why other universities have not eliminated it, if it is a challenge. And then our biggest changes in the proposal here really do come on page 4 with regard to the tuition waiver benefit program. So you'll see that we've proposed an increase in the credit hours, and the addition of the ability to accrue hours to make thesis and dissertation hours eligible to use tuition waiver benefit for some of those, and that the waivers could be used by 3 individuals at one time in the dependents list of dependents. It's really repetitive there. So those are some of the biggest changes there. And then everything else really is with regard to the transition to retirement program, which, again, we thank you for all of the work that you did to bring that proposal forward after what I think was a really positive and valuable conversation about what this looks like in other places. Our biggest changes, of course, were wanting to include our 12-month instructional faculty and open to, I think we have the right language in there, but I'm not sure, on 229, that's something we can definitely discuss. We had questions and concerns about having age limits on it, and so we just offered to eliminate that. Above that, on line 222, you'll notice that we are proposing to cross out the word most. So the T2RP participants retain their tenure, if applicable, as well as most other rights and responsibilities, such as. We were curious what rights and responsibilities were to be excluded.
For example, the biggest example is sabbatical.
Okay. So I think
The most was actually pretty carefully selected, and it's not intended to be any sort of sleight of hand, but there's some, it wouldn't make sense for somebody to go on sabbatical while they're in.
Which is outlined later.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think what we figured was, because it says as well as other rights and responsibilities, it's not complete. We have an example, accrual of sick leave, and then we have the things that are excluded later, so we can look at that maybe in some detail. The other highlighted area down here on 242 is inserting a line. So of course we always want to make sure that we're looking at equitable implementation of any contractual section, and certainly the ability for all members to equally access their benefit, right? So I'm always concerned when I see language that says, you know, requests of supervisor. So if I, you know, if Giovanna and I both request from our supervisors to go on T2RP and we have the same proposals, and my supervisor says, that looks great, no problem, and Giovanna says, absolutely not, I don't like you, which hopefully they wouldn't actually say out loud.
Not about Giovanna. There's no way that would ever.
That's a bad example. Let's flip it. And the supervisor told me they didn't like me, so they don't want me to have access to that. We want to make sure that we're putting in as much protective language that this is a benefit that members should be able to access, and given any reasonable conversation and proposal and good faith effort to make it work, that that is what it would look like, and that if there are any problems with regard to that, you know, obviously we don't want people saying, I just want to come 1 hour a week and never do any work at all. I'm just really tired, but I just really need half my paycheck. We're not trying to be unreasonable, but just trying to make sure equitable implementation is in the contract in some ways. And then our final question or issue on the last page, section 6, line 274. We did have a question about why there would be a change to anything with regard to insurance if somebody entered the T2RP And I don't know if that's information.
There are a number of points that I'm going to want to go back through and talk about. But since you specifically asked a question about this, and I'm so glad that Ashley Longoria is here as well. As I understand it, what the university does is on October 1st, they look at a person's status and their FTE. And if the FTE changes from year to year and drops below 0.75, I believe, that will affect the deductions for health insurance. Am I?
So it's through the state of Florida, and it's called the measurement period. So the 12-month measurement period is from October 3rd to October 2nd of the next year. And so they look at that average FTE for that 12-month period, and if that average FTE is less than 0.75, at that point that employee's premiums are prorated. So
for the first year, Chuck was...
Yeah, it would be...
It wouldn't be a
there's
would
no
be
change.
No problem at all.
Okay, but once you get to 50...
If it in the second year, it could be, regardless of the FTE in the first year, even if it is 0.5, we're okay.
Right.
It's somebody goes into that second year.
And we want to encourage people to go to HR for those facts, so not filter it through chairs who aren't as good at getting the facts.
Just don't filter it through anyone. So is the change that the premium becomes more or less for the individual?
It's more if it's less than 0.75. And it's also important to note that whatever they're measured at on October 3rd, they're locked in for that very next year. So even if on January 1st, their FTE changed to 0.25 even, that same full-time premium would be locked in for that next year, if that makes sense.
But the program would lock them in anyway at 0.5 for that last year. Even if it was the only year they were doing it, wouldn't their premiums would not be affected.
Right. So our part-time faculty are paying substantially more for the same health insurance.
Substantially?
Is it substantially more?
Well, you're essentially looking at what the full premium is, and you're prorating it based on, you know, what the normal employer and employee, and that's not UCF. That's the State of Florida Group Insurance Program. So.
Probably good for that working group to look at, right? Okay, that clarifies that for us then. Thank you.
What are your thoughts on that? Knowing that information, does that change?
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. We have some larger questions about... I think it's a sense that encourages people to meet with HR is not a particularly big deal. In other locations where we're essentially putting the HR website into the contract, I have much larger concerns about that. And I think the university should actually reconsider some of those suggestions as well. And HR. It would put HR in a really difficult position in terms of what their website needs to provide and be accurate, and the level of monitoring from all of the different parties could be potentially laborious in a way where unintentionally there could be a number of problems. And you know that I'm a big fan of preventing preventable conflicts about those kinds of things. But I think that's fine. If we want to encourage people to talk about changes, they should, as they start to enter into their transition to retirement, meet with HR.
Right? I keep trying to set a meeting to set my retirement date, and they're not telling me. It's too early.
Oh, I can't just go in and set it now. And say, I'm planning to transition to retirement in the year of our Lord. I don't know. 2050, when do I get to retirement?
August of 2031. Are you guys ready? Can I do it now?
My pre-proposal for my plan to transition to retirement. We can really start getting people really prepared for their departure from the university. So yeah, that's fine. What were the other?
Okay, I want to reiterate what Sherry said at the outset. We really appreciate getting a chance to look at this in advance, and it's very helpful to give us a chance to kind of review some of the changes that you're proposing and look at some of the things that you seem to have accepted also that we've talked about, and we're very, very grateful for that. I'm also was pretty pleased to see that I think there's some prospect for us to agree on the T2RP as an option. So that's great. So thank you very much for the feedback on that. As we were thinking about T2RP and proposing it at two meetings ago, when we talked about it in here, really the discussion was, is there something that we can do as an alternative to the phased retirement program? So we're still kind of looking at that transition to retirement program as something that would be ultimately in the book in place of the phased retirement program. So I want to make sure that I keep that in mind. I'd like to go through sort of point by point, like 24.1 and so on, and just sort of highlight things that that we've picked up on that. 24.1, there are two things that I want to point out. We had proposed an additional sentence at the end of 24.1 that says employees are encouraged to contact human resources with questions regarding their benefits. And we're kind of curious. A lot of the things that we had proposed had obviously resonated and many had been picked up. That one wasn't. And not sure why that, because it sounded like we just agreed it's always good to contact HR if you've got a question about benefits.
Yeah, I think it was part of our review of this initially was trying to limit the number of times that we say HR is the place for this information, because things do need to be in the contract so that they're in the contract, and then HR needs to implement the contract. And we need to be very careful about making HR the contract and the arbiter of that, right? So initially we were kind of removing a lot more of it. I'm trying to open up your last proposal so I can see what it actually, what was the date of your, it was
the 21st, 5/21.
I think would be, I mean, depending on how we walk through the rest of the article, we'll be open to reinserting that.
Yeah,
as long
okay.
as that word encourage
okay.
would remain, and it
well, and
doesn't actually
I hear what you're saying.
Up the space where information is.
There's a risk of saying something too much, and then there's places where we might leave it out, and you start saying, why wasn't it mentioned here? If there was a single place where we were going to put it, I think that first section is the best place. So, also, the heading for that section, I believe we had struck the word improvements.
Oh,
that we're not
sure.
really talking about improvements.
That's fine.
24.2, we're good. 24.3, we're good. Thank you very much.
John?
Hey,
John.
And Stella.
You can park the baby next to Brianna. She wants to get her hands all over.
The youngest member of our team.
Can I go right over?
On 24.4, we like the idea of the knights.ucf.edu email. That makes sense. A question that we might have is this idea of forwarding the email for 12 months. I think it may be that a shorter period might be sufficient for that, and I'd certainly want to review this with us. I imagine we'll have a
something
caucus
like
after this discussion.
Yeah, probably 6 months, I think, would be plenty. I think Joel indicated that
I was saying 90 days was 3 months, but if this is something that makes harmony and everyone happy, I can certainly support that.
We have to beat Charlie periodically.
It's time for my monthly meeting. They've both been gone, so I've been allowed to run.
Now they're back from vacation, right?
So yes!
It should be renewed. Renewed with...
I'm not sure we're renewed in what direction, but...
Okay, well, moving on. 24.5, this is a section that we sort of think isn't something that we really bargain. This is more information section, and we had recommended that we just strike that section. It's part of the situation where, like in the first paragraph where we say, if you got questions about your benefits, employees should talk to HR. That there's not really anything that we can change. All that's really taken care of for us by the state of Florida with regard to the optional retirement program.
One of the things you said earlier resonated. It was, you know, careful of making HR the arbiter. They have no control,
right,
over ORP.
You can leave it at the baby. The state of Florida is the one who dictates the mandatory retirement plans, and so actually the ORP is only one of the three retirement plans that are available to faculty. So,
making you aware that they can't change anything that the state does, so just making you aware of that. Look at her, she's coming over here.
She has so much hair.
Well, the hair is wonderful.
It is.
But it's how much she's grown. It's like she's doubled in size.
Yep, and she's got a tooth now.
A tooth.
Can you smile? Can you say hi?
She's like, nah.
Now, when someone so young comes into the bargaining room, you would think we'd be talking about anything but retirement. But here we are, as luck would have it.
She's so pretty.
On section 24.6, I think we had said something like, you know, after ratification of this agreement, no employee shall be permitted to enroll. And I think you're saying you're proposing that there be a grace for the next year or so. We just want to make sure we understand that. That's something I'm sure we'll be talking about. And if we do essentially suspend the program or put it in hiatus for a period of time, I think the legacy language could come out and be reinstated if at some point in the future.
I think we actually did that once before.
Yeah,
and I think we do that with other sections with salary increases that may not apply from one contract to the next.
That doesn't mean that we're going to leave your people out in the cold who are enrolled.
And that's what 24.6 says very explicitly.
Mm-hmm.
So that takes care of. We're on the page 4. I'm sure you've given us a lot to talk about when we get together about the tuition waiver benefit. There's a couple of questions that I wanted to ask. That on line 179, it seems that you've added this, who have worked for the university for a minimum of one semester. And I was a little surprised. Can you help me understand why we want to add that in there? We want to think about adding that in there?
Yeah, this was a little bit of an offer of compromise because we don't have any thing in there right now about that. So adding one additional step amount of time for people to figure out the system and enroll in it. This is definitely a section that is Mr. Rabel's passion project, and he is wonderfully on his honeymoon now.
He's now on a cruise
in Europe. I'm starting to feel very left out of all of these European cruises, and when will I go on one? I don't know. Certainly not in the next year. the idea was, with some of the increases, having a little bit of establishment of time at the university and understanding. Instead of trying to get people enrolled the very first day that they're here, we thought that might be beneficial, and if it's not, it's not.
So putting on my UFF bargaining hat, it looks to me like somebody would be taking something away by adding that language.
We just got rid of it for paid parental. It adds a layer of stuff that we have to monitor that
we don't need it. It was an offer.
Oh. Okay. All right.
If it's more work, we don't want to
increase labor. I think it potentially causes stress for someone who has a student here as a child, for instance, and then you come to work for the university. It would be a smooth and easy transition, in theory, if they could get the classes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so it just seems like it would be more work for us to police something then.
Sure.
And that's why we found that with the paid parental.
It was just impossible really to nail down the time. It's like, okay, come here pregnant, fine. Everybody,
yes, because
fine.
You cannot ask before they've arrived.
That's right.
So, absolutely.
Well, some of them are perfectly forthright.
Sure.
That should not be a consideration. So.
Right.
And Stella, we want to make sure you understand you have to apply in order to be eligible.
And be accepted.
Can I get in on my teeth? My teeth are so pink right now.
On lines 183 and 184 is that sentence that you're suggesting be stricken, one of these things where you're cautious about maintenance of websites and
yes, and so on. Putting a website in a contract is risky.
And I'm sure we'll be talking about 186 to 188, the additional language there, and 192, the words that are stricken there, and then basically added back in 196, 197 in a different way.
Yeah, I'm curious what the reasoning was that those were excluded to begin with.
They always have been on any special programs, and I even use as an example when we talk about thesis and dissertation hours, corporations. You know, we have a number of, particularly in College of Engineering and Computer Science, we have a number of part-time students who are working for employers who are eligible for tuition reimbursement on everything but these one-on-one courses. So without mentioning any of our corporate partners, somebody who's an employee there is doing a thesis option master's may be reimbursed for tuition for all of the face-to-face courses that they take. But even though this is a face-to-face course in a very personal way, they don't get reimbursed for that. That's dedicated time that a faculty member is spending.
Is not compensated for. So that's, I guess, I have a, if one side of it is true, why is the other side of it not true, right? So we have a lot of people who are sponsored by their corporations in our corporate communication program. And I've never had somebody have to pay for their own thesis hours. I have had to pay for their own, because it's a requirement of the degree, right? And so you may not earn your master's degree without completing that, or we do have a professional project option, right? But the idea of them doing a independent study, or we have externships and things like that, those are usually not reimbursable for them, but anything that's a requirement for the program has been reimbursable for them. So that's actually surprising to me to hear that corporations would limit for something that actually allows them to complete the degree. And it is dedicated time from faculty. It is a lot of time
and investment
from faculty, and it is not taken into account in any remarkable way except for usually a checkbox on your
AESPs.
And so it's not, I'm not sure what the argument that you have to pay directly as an individual for it. There's no difference in how it's counted in a schedule for a faculty member. So I don't know why those two things are in the same part of the argument, if that makes sense. Like, just because it's a one-on-one. So our thought there about why we pulled those out instead of everything on that list is that these are requirements for programs instead of options.
That perspective is helpful for us to understand. And, you know, we'll be talking about this accrual or rollover of credit hours or
it's like phone minutes. That used to be a thing.
And the three persons, that, you know, it's something else. So I think we have some things that that we need to discuss. 24.9, we're good. 24.8, we're good. I'm going backwards now. Excuse me. I think on line 222 and 24.10, I hope we've clarified a little bit what this most means. We gave one example here. Another is sabbaticals, professional development leave.
I actually feel pretty strongly about that particular word. We're not asking to replace it with all. We're just saying eliminate it, right? And so I think the opposite pushback would say, as well as all of the rights, and I thought the moderate position was just to remove the adjective. Yep.
We will take that under consideration.
Well, can we get an understanding then of what most, by removing most, you don't mean all, I guess is what I'm saying.
Right. because we understand that there are things specifically outlined that you wouldn't have access to. But I think once you say most, it almost draws more attention to what is being left out than it would otherwise. I look at that and go, what are the other ways that you're trying to take away some of my rights and responsibilities? So people, the questions, like here are the questions that they're going to get when people call like faculty excellence, right? Because that's who they call when they say, how do I do this? And they're going to say, and even though it says all of this in the article, right? They will still say, do I get to keep my tenure? Do I still get to vote on things in my department, right? And that is the sentence that'll start, and it's like, yes, literally right before that, it says you do get to retain your tenure. We will still have to remind people of that. And that means you have all of the rights and responsibilities of a tenured faculty member, but not...
Nobody gets to choose what the most means.
Right.
I hear you. So what if you eliminate the word most, but after same FDE, you say something like subject to the provisions below? And that covers
why
what we
is that
were
necessary?
Because we're concerned about people who have been non-reappointed or have a sabbatical, and that's outlined below.
You're
and
concerned
so
about people who have been non-reappointed.
People who have received notice of non-reappointment are not eligible.
Right.
People who are in drop are not eligible.
Right.
So what I'm saying is you take out the most and just say subject to below, which is subject. It's subject to below anyway, but do you see what I'm saying? Like that replaces, it tells you exactly what the different rights and responsibilities are. It was just a suggestion I'm thinking out loud to try to mitigate your problem and ours. We don't want anyone else to choose either.
Yeah, I'm just...
Or is it maybe obvious that... Okay.
I don't know why. If you've been non-reappointed, I don't know why you're asking about teaching marketing. I understand that that's because that's a reasonable position to have, and not everybody is reasonable upon learning that possibility for their employment. But the...
If someone's been non-reappointed, I bet we could get the chair to agree to a reduced FTE.
Without this program.
This is now an option that chairs are recommending. No, you've been here a while. Might I point you to 24.10 of your contract? I hadn't even thought about that. I'm not mad at it as an option. So yeah,
I guess the thing is that if we can say that, if we remove the word most, but understand that there are the other rights and responsibilities are as below, then that's what I was saying, is just that.
If we have a common understanding of that.
Yeah, I just really like the removal of a word before that. It's just other. I mean, I just think when you read that sentence, you're not thinking about... I understand that it's in the benefits article, right? But I'm trying to think about how you interpret it while you're reading it. You're not thinking about it in terms of the rights and responsibilities of your benefits. You're thinking the rights and responsibilities of my position.
Mm-hmm.
And people are very cautious about giving up rights and responsibilities when it comes to things like tenure, number of years in your department,
okay,
positions on committees. So, I mean, if it's... If that language is a hill to die on, we can talk more about it. But.
Chuck and I were talking about it. We felt like it just was descriptive, but we recognize that it's cause for concern. We just don't want it to be all, because then write an A.
That's why I didn't replace
it with
all.
I know. But people have a habit of adding all, and as long as you understand it's not all and we understand it's not all, we have it on tape that it's not all, I'm better off. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
Is the light on?
Yeah. June 11th, the year of our 2019.
20 till...
Yeah. The lack of all does not mean all.
And I think, do you see what I mean? Like, that's just, I want to make sure that we have a shared understanding so that later people don't try to claim something else.
Sure.
That's fine with me.
As long as we do, then that's not a hill for us.
We'll definitely talk about that very seriously.
Okay. And we want to look at the full-time 12-month instructional E&G and make sure we've got that.
Mm-hmm.
We're on board with that. That's something for us to talk about. On lines 235, the 67 that's here was just simply pulling what was in the old article for phase retirement. So we're not committed to the 67. That was just, what other number are we going to use? We'll use the one that's already there. That was it. So that potentially could even go, that there'd be no...
But you'd like to keep the 62?
not necessarily 62, okay. But there, I think there needs to be a place where somebody becomes eligible, because we don't expect that somebody who comes here at age 30 after finishing graduate school at age 40 says, you know.
Listen, Chuck, that's my whole question. By eliminating that paragraph so I can enroll in this next year. No, I hear you. And we looked at that and talked about it quite a bit, actually, in terms of, and I'm not sure any of us know what that should be, or if we have in other places where, like, the 62 comes from.
That was a phased retirement.
That's the phased retirement language.
And to me, maybe I'm
mistaken.
We're going
to talk to our expert during caucus.
Okay. We will come back to you with a new proposal on that, which will probably, which may include only a point where one becomes eligible, but they would remain eligible as long as they're employed.
And I will let you know that we're very open to that amendment. Mm-hmm. But the 67 is my biggest concern.
When's your birthday?
I'll be 67 next April. I feel like that's true. That's not true. But next year is a big birthday for me.
Oh, wow.
Actually, I will be 67 next April.
Yeah. Ah, see? Now
but
you're
ineligible
not,
for the program.
I know, you're not in the unit. But
I know, I'm ineligible
like it to
for
still
the
be
program.
Available be 67? People are working beyond that, right? And hoping that a lot of people work beyond that.
Yeah, I don't plan to retire next year.
60 retirements a year, we're going to be in trouble, right?
Yeah.
It's a lot of
who
searches.
Can afford to retire?
That is... real. I don't know.
Lines 242 and 243, you added a sentence that I might even argue was covered, I thought, by the next sentence. So help me understand what that sentence adds.
It adds a small, just a really small amount of contractual language and even legal coverage to be able to argue you have to engage in this. I mean, reasonable good faith, these are actual legal terms, right? It sounds like it's just conversational, but it's not. So that we're assured that people are being required to look at these proposals in the most equitable way possible. We cannot remove bias, but we can mitigate bias, right? And so the goal is to mitigate any problems with the equitable implementation of the accessing of this benefit, right? And I know I say this, we've been on this article for a while, so I think I say it every time we meet, but when a benefit is available to our membership, it is a benefit to access. It's not a benefit to say, please, may I have my benefit, right? And so the idea that if you're not being unreasonable in your proposal for what this looks like, right, you're not saying, I want to show up 1 hour a semester and just kind of fade away, that people are engaging in good faith efforts to make it work. What is your concern with that language?
I guess things that are reasonable and of good faith are in the eyes of the beholder.
Sure.
I think that's...
or in the eyes of an arbitrator.
And I think there may be some examples. I'll borrow my own college. There are some programs. Mechanical engineering, right now, enrollment is going through the roof. And some other programs that I better not mention on tape are seeing a small dip in enrollment. Mm-hmm. So the example that you had earlier, if you and Giovanna go and talk to your respective supervisor and say, hey, we're both interested in this, there may be a different reaction, and it has nothing to do with you, mm-hmm. and you both had an equitable chance to say, hey, I'm interested in this, can we make it work? But if there's a program that's seeing reduced enrollment, you know, maybe a chair's not going to be so inclined to participate. Now, that person could still say, well, then I'm not, okay, I'll stay.
Why would reduced enrollment be a reason to keep somebody from retiring?
Well, they might be less inclined. They may be, it depends. They may be more interested in it. But I'm saying if enrollment has dropped precipitously, which it has not in any engineering programs. Put that on. I just think that there may be situations where keeping somebody around is going to be advantageous. A chair in a department where enrollment is growing through the roof, I can't afford to lose anybody. Even keeping Yovana at halftime is better than losing her altogether. So I'm more inclined.
So I guess even with that
I don't know that I can anticipate all the circumstances that these
chairs. We absolutely can't, and that's the point, right? Because I look at that and I say the dip in enrollment has absolutely nothing to do with me as an individual faculty member. If I'm doing everything that I'm meant to do at an above satisfactory level, I can't control that. But you're going to ask me to change my end of career planning because of that. You can ask me to, right? And we can have a good faith conversation about that. And you could say, it would be better for the program and it would be better for me as the director of this program if you wait. And I can say, I hear you, and I care about the future of this program, so I'll stay. Or I'll say, listen, I already have my cabin in Maine. I'm out. So I'm either out this way, or now I just retire, right? So that's the other option, right? Like, you can't stop somebody from leaving.
Nope.
So then you can just say, you can have me at three quarters of time, or I'm gone. And so I want people to engage in that conversation in the best possible context and environment. So it's hard for me to understand an argument against language like reasonable good faith consideration. It just seems like that is what we would want from all sides.
Okay, I'm sure there'll be something we'll take a look at during our caucus. And I think the last thing at the end there, we'd already talked about.
Yeah.
And one other thing that I wanted to just throw out is something that I know I will bring up during the caucus, but I'll also just put it out there for your information as well. If we restructure this article kind of as we have here with this transition to retirement program near the end, I think one thing that we should think about is the section on retirees should come after, because what comes after the transition is you're a retiree.
Just moving.
Just
it.
Proposing a reorganization to put it, things in order, so to
yeah.
speak.
Mm-hmm. Make it a chronological article. And team, did I miss anything on 24 that we wanted to talk about?
We'll soon find out.
You did just fine, Chuck.
That's the case. Should we
take
a caucus?
Like to take a caucus.
Mm-hmm. And
you all go where?
General Counsel's office.
Mm-hmm. General Counsel. Okay.
Right?
Well, or my office, because I have it up, but whatever.
Oh, okay. We can go either place.
Just start knocking on doors. No. knock on 350, please.
Come on. Yeah, stand up.
Marco! Okay, now you can bust out in song, huh?
No, now you can
speak all you want. Yeah. Be a little sweet out, huh?
He's being very quiet.
Sometimes, right?
I don't know.
Until
they speak still Tuesday for the baby.
You guys are right. She more than double. She
will do a Florida out. So you try to keep it dry. You know, like, I don't know.
Okay, three times. Walk through this, or
I guess we can do that.
Oh, I mean,
yeah.
Okay.
Oh, are we back on?
Yes, we're back on.
Are we?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Blathering on about the temperature and babies. Did that copies already? Okay.
Do they?
Well, she's looking at something.
No, I don't think they have copies yet.
No, not yet. 1, 2, 3. And these are for you. And we.
All set?
All set. You can walk through it.
Okay. Based on our conversations in our last session here, we have made some changes to our proposal of 2024. I just want to run through those very quickly. With 24.1, we reinstituted the sentence that we had talked about at the end of that article. On 24.2, we're at the same place. 24.3, we're at the same place. 24.4, the only change that we have made is the forwarding the email would be for 6 months instead of 12. 24.5, we found a wonderful sentence at the end of the old, the existing 24.5, and are proposing that that become the new 24.5. The parties agree that the optional retirement program and the Florida retirement system are governed by Florida statutes and regulations of the responsible division of state government, and refer to this site for details, because there's nothing in there that we can...
Where did you find that?
I thought it was
from 83 to 87 ish.
Okay. All right, then 24.6, phase retirement program, we're suggesting the change that we talked about, but now no employees shall be permitted to enroll in this program after ratification of this document. So employees that are currently enrolled in the phase retirement program would be permitted to remain enrolled until they're finished. It's just no one else would be able to enroll at this point. And then we've got some information.
Let's go through what
24/7.
No, let's talk about that last.
Okay.
Let's go to the other things that we've dealt with.
24.8, I think we're at the same place we were. 24.9, the first 24.9, is where we were before. The second 24.9, which we'll make 24.10.
Like, oh, we've developed the new numbers.
We are accepting your language about 12-month instructional E&G employees.
HR was very helpful in helping us figure out a way to deal with this
age
situation, because... they pointed out to us that there are different retirement ages or the different programs, and
yeah,
so the basic criteria would just be you have to otherwise be eligible to retire at the end of the program. So whatever the age is, whatever particular program you're in, mm-hmm. When you end the
two RP
program, you've got to be eligible to retire. You've got to hit that mark. And we just eliminated the end period. We're not interested. I mean, you know, if people are healthy and want to keep working, that's fine with us. So we thought that was a And I'm sorry, Chuck, but I didn't think you were in the room when they were talking about that, so that's why I thought I'd better jump in there.
And then on 258 and 259, we're accepting your statement about reasonable good faith consideration and all these factors. And I guess I'm handing it off to Sherry.
So, can we get the non-fun part?
Get back to page four.
Yeah. I do understand the desire to expand the tuition waiver benefit program. I really do. Unfortunately, that's just not something that we are going to be able to do this time around, because we have trustees who are barking at the program already in its current form, and I'm having to defend it. So I know I can't sell an expanded version of that.
What is their, I'm just curious, what is their complaint about it?
They think that it's, they don't, and I think that it's a cost, to us, and it's hard. It is hard for some
Sherry's on tape.
So let me go on the record then for part of the reason why we think it's important to continue to expand this program is because of what it looks like at other universities across the country, and that this is actually, as somebody who is tasked as a faculty member and other things to improve our recruitment across wide ranges of populations, this is a challenge for us when people come and look at working here. You know, the conversations that we have when people find out, you know, a few years ago it was we had no parental leave and people were not pleased with that. They don't love that we don't have family leave, and they say, well, at this other university that I'm looking at, my kid can get their entire degree, no question. They're going to be able to enroll. And we have all of these barriers, right? So just for the record, for people who continue to not understand the benefit of it, it is actually a pretty significant recruitment tool.
Yeah.
For faculty to know that they themselves and their dependents have access to education at the institution that they're choosing to dedicate their careers to.
I think part of the problem with this program also is that has always been a state program, and it was applied to all state employees.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had trouble when we were even initially expanding this program, because it's hard for something that was initially intended to be for everybody, I think it was really intended initially just for, state employees, and they weren't thinking about the university employees as part of that group. But for us to vastly expand what we offer compared to what the state's willing to give to other state workers is difficult for not just our trustees, but for other parties in Tallahassee, if I can be.
I hear you. My
continued response to them would be that when people come to
Orlando and I say, tell your kid to get a job at Disney because they have a better chance of getting their education at UCF paid for working for them than if their parent is a professor here, that is a very tough argument for us to make. So.
I don't doubt that. We did try to clarify for some things in this new language, just that we were asked to clarify that we've always said you couldn't use the waiver for state universities or state colleges because of the funds, because of the new downtown. We were asked to make sure that people understood that applied to Valencia at UCF downtown.
Who asked for that clarification? Because I think that it's not always clear downtown which courses belong to UCF or Valencia, quite frankly. I am a downtown faculty member with a program that is being fully offered downtown. And some of our core classes will be taught by Valencia faculty, but they will be under a UCF zip code. That just seems very confusing.
Well,
it reads like you can't get a UCF downtown degree with the benefit.
You can't get, in the same way that you couldn't take courses from UCF, from Valencia, whether you were downtown or on any of their campuses. So it's just a clarification that not only can you not use them for credits at the East and the West campus, but you can't use it for a credit that has a Valencia SIP code if it's downtown, just as you couldn't if it were East or West campus. I know.
I'm just curious if the people who are asking for that clarification have been in the rooms where we've been talking about how hard that clarification is actually for our curriculums. And I am more than a little hesitant to put something in the contract that is not clear in our programs before it actually exists. We are already facing many challenges with keeping our programs enrolled at the level that they are. It is more expensive for students to live downtown. It has been a little bit of a tough sell. We do not even have offices there. We don't have dates when we get to be in the building, but we're putting something in the contract that lacks clarity. So let me just that's my reaction.
Okay.
We'll, of course, look at that. But I understand the desire to try to clarify as we continue to create these arrangements. I don't think it offers the clarity that they want.
Okay. Well, maybe we can see what a different way of approaching that. We added undergraduate to the graduate medical education programs. We're just not going to allow tuition waivers for, because those are just expensive programs. We've always said graduate level courses. We've always said programs with tuition in excess of graduate tuition rates, such as cost recovery programs, market recovery programs. Some colleges are now running these same types of programs through continuing ed. So we need to make clear that applied there. And there's some there's like one or two professional programs like DPT that technically don't fall into market or cost recovery, but they still charge more for those programs. And so we wanted to clarify that those fall into that as well. Otherwise, everything stays the same. And we're basically just saying status quo for 24.7 with...
I want to clarify whether or not this is status quo.
Okay.
Because it sounds like we asked for more and you came back with less.
With less.
Which is a really hard sell for people who already are really unhappy with the way that this program is implemented. So previously, undergraduate medical education programs were not listed in here as a limitation. You're saying that they're not going to...
Well, we always had, because the language was courses ineligible include but are not limited to, so we always had the ability to exclude them under the old language, but we felt like it was unfair to not specify what we meant by that.
What was actually being excluded.
So we don't want to, we don't want people to get a shock when they think, oh, well, that must be included. And we say, well, no, actually, we under that catch-all phrase, we're excluding it.
So what does that look like? That's like nursing?
No, I don't think it's nursing. It's...
nursing, is that already premium tuition?
No.
So it's social work, I'm sorry.
It's premium tuition programs that fall under that umbrella.
At the undergraduate level.
Yeah. Basically, we're excluding premium tuition programs or tuition programs that are in excess in some way or another because they charge extra fees or something from.
Have we ever had a discussion about those programs still being eligible if the dependent or the employee pays the difference? So instead of having to pay the whole thing, they're just paying those extra fees.
I don't know that we've ever had that discussion. I mean, I can't remember us having that discussion at the table, so I'm, you know.
Yeah, I don't recall it either.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I understand that that may not be something we could come to an agreement or even have enough information about this round, but I think I would like to start exploring that because that seems
sure.
reasonable to me rather than just exclude it, still say these are expensive programs, but you can still have the.
You can have
the
base,
threshold benefit,
the threshold benefit
that
but just pay
is
the
offered
excess.
For the base if you can pay those additional fees, because that seems like that would be a healthy compromise for people to reduce some of their cost.
That
for
sounds
these
like
breaks.
Fun for student accounts. What do you think? But I think that's a good suggestion, actually.
Yeah, I do.
Because it sounds like to me that's one of the big sticking points are these expensive programs.
Yeah, that is the big sticking point, quite honestly.
From the Board of Trustees perspective, the cost of this program to the university is the missing of the tuition that they would get from some students.
Yeah.
By enrolling people who cannot enroll early enough to really be taking the place of anybody else. Do they understand the way in which people access this? I mean, I guess that's what is confusing for me because our people cannot, so they cannot do an expensive program. If they want to do a cheap program, like a program that I run, that is... as I was saying earlier, where we catch the falling fruit from the falling fruit. It is an open access program. You can get it fully online. You can get it fully face-to-face, whatever you want. We'll take anyone and everyone. And our classes are getting bigger all the time to meet the need of that. And people still can't enroll in those classes until the last minute. So whatever imaginary student that was going to give us no money to become a communication and conflict major, right? Or likely their state money or however they access all of the, you know, 80% of my students are transfers from Direct Connect, right? So it's just very, and I understand the challenges of educating people who are not in education and have no idea how an institution runs or what the actual experience of anybody in these programs is. But it continues to baffle me, some of the arguments of cost. I think it is more expensive to continue to lose good faculty over this. So that's my, I too am on tape. Any other questions from the team about what?
Yeah, I have a couple of questions.
Mm-hmm.
So
sure.
On line 200,
mm-hmm.
What are the undergraduate medical education programs that?
So that's what they just told us is the it's the premium tuition programs.
Mm-hmm. And there are some at the undergraduate level, apparently.
Okay, because what I just did is Googled
mm-hmm.
UCF undergraduate medical program. And what it comes up with, you know, it's returning everything in the College of Medicine and Biomedical Sciences. So I think we need better clarity on that language.
Okay.
What's the obstacle? I don't understand.
Well, because, you know, if you're using just a general interpretation of what that is, if you search it, it's saying, okay, it's everything in the medical.
Yeah.
So,
interpret
that as I can't do that either.
Yeah. But what Sherry said was something totally different, which is what I think our previous understanding of it had been, it's these premium tuition programs. And so along the same lines, in line 201 there, should it be graduate level courses semicolon and then or programs with tuition in excess?
No.
Of standard graduate tuition rates?
That would exclude all graduate courses.
Yeah, you don't want to exclude all graduate
courses. Okay, that's what I'm trying to make sure.
Yeah,
it's
only graduate programs that have premium tuition.
Ah, okay, so it's courses or programs.
Because you can take a course in another program,
right?
So that would be more expensive than your regular.
Right, so then, all right, so why is the word or programs there?
Yeah.
Isn't it really, because what we're talking about are courses throughout here, and then all of a sudden right there, those two places we're talking about programs.
I think, the course that you're taking, what program are you in?
Nonprofit, but all of mine are covered.
Okay,
yeah,
so
but we've always had graduate medical. We've always had graduate medical education programs. So you've used programs before.
He's looking.
I know.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
So it's not our market rate programs, cost recovery programs. That's not new language.
Right, but I'm wondering, like market rate Yeah.
Okay,
I'm just wondering if it's clear enough.
I want to say in business they have a management program with HR focus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You can take courses in that. For the premium tuition rate, or you can take them on campus, but you can't get the degree on campus without paying the premium tuition. Does that?
So you can take the same course
again slowly.
If you take the same course in a different program, it has the extra fees, but you take that course not in that program, and it doesn't have the extra fees. So
you can't graduate with a major in HR focus without taking at least some of the program, some of the classes in the program. I think if that helps you at all. I know I wasn't very clear.
And are those graduate programs
that,
only?
That particular one was graduate, and that's what this language says, graduate level.
I'm just trying to make sure that we're being accurate with it.
I think we're trying to.
Yeah. I remember the discussion we had the first time
ages
around
ago.
This, ages ago, about the market tuition programs. I think maybe some of the even came from the business school and explained it at one point.
Yeah. I think Ford tried to explain it. Yeah, it's... I mean...
It was like, I don't know, 6 or 7 years ago. It was a lot of
them. It feels like longer.
It feels like we've been doing this forever. I know.
It could have
been.
Right.
It could have been.
Yeah.
I've been bargaining since
2005.
Oh,
goodness.
And dog years, can you multiply that by 7?
2004 for me.
I think bargaining years are, in fact, dog years.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. I see.
What we didn't do was reorder because we wanted to make sure that everybody was clear before we started moving things around. So.
Okay. I think we would like to caucus for a couple of minutes.
Okay.
And then
Maybe I can get some clarification on these two issues that you raised.
So we're in 350,
okay.
But I'll put a note.
Okay.
That's great.
Sorry.
We're very complex.
Nothing this belongs to. I don't like these kinds of pens. So somebody wants to claim it.
I know. Now that I'm in faculty excellence.
There's pens everywhere.
I know. I said my pen ran out of ink, Maxine. May I please have a new pen? And she was like, you're welcome to go into the closet. And I said, it's not locked. And she said, no. And I said, I don't understand it. You just allow us to print without
whatever
a code.
We want.
I can just... have a pen to go through three layers of security to access a pen. It's a,
oh,
it's
taken
a really
your
joyous.
Soul. Your soul is being drained out through the seat.
But I
can.
I'll tell you what, though, for our organization system.
It is astounding, isn't it?
I do just like to stand in there. It just settles me. It's color-coded. Everything's labeled.
It is.
The notepads are lined up by size and color.
Oh, yeah.
It's like my spirit closet.
Yeah.
I do like to now spend time in the provost office supply closet. If you can't find me, that's I'm experiencing zen.
And this is all being recorded.
Yeah.
Yes.
This is the most interesting take in a while.
I hope somebody starts listening to these as a podcast.
I think you need to have outtakes from collective bargaining.
Yeah.
Jen's going on about some office supplies. I don't know what's happening. It's like, this is what happens once you get tenure and you start getting excited about office supplies.
I should have been
thinking about it. All right. Okay. I guess last, did you get clarity?
No, everybody that I need to talk to is in a meeting or on vacation.
Oh,
so.
Okay. Well, very rude of them.
It is rude. So I think actually, in a lot of ways, we're relatively close
yeah.
to being able to
very close.
Close the article, and I think we're in good shape. We're, of course, disappointed with the state of the tuition waiver benefit program and would really like some clarity about those.
I will email that to you.
And the downtown piece. And also, just once again, I would really like to pursue the idea of having the benefit be about that cost instead of programs specifically. And so with that, I think, you know, once we're able to clarify that, we're very close, except for, at this point, I'm still just unable to agree to eliminating the phased retirement program from the contract right now. I do really want to offer the compromise of a pause on the program this year so that there's not co-enrollment or that difficulty, but in communicating this big of a change to our membership, we just need to do that the right way and take that into account.
If we can reach agreement on everything else, I will accept the pause.
What we're concerned about is running both programs simultaneously. That's what we're trying to avoid. And so I wanted to make sure that that was clear, that we do not want both programs to be running simultaneously.
There you go. I understand that's your concern.
So I think we may actually maybe next time reach agreement on this, and maybe we can
close.
Can get 9 knocked off, and then maybe
slog through the rest of it.
Maybe we can actually get this thing done.
Yes. That will be a joy. I did have one other question. Yes, Stella, that is the right. Just like, we're ready to close. Shut it down, Sandoval. Oh no, I made her upset. For Article 26, we did want to, I wanted to get some clarity about, I know there have been some emails about the forms, and I've been trying to get, I think most of that discussion was participation, and so I'm catching up a little bit, and also trying to get information from the people who do process our memberships.
About payroll deduction.
Yeah.
So I sent it to Scott to let him kind of like give a preview.
Okay.
So currently we receive a signed form, and we sort of log it, check it, scan it, and send it on to HR. The new, because we're no longer having that signature, the UFF is sending us the list. So what we were looking for is what I described in the email, and I'm afraid I don't have it in front of me now, but my memory tells me, which is not completely reliable, but fairly, that what I was looking for was an email from the UFF that was an Excel spreadsheet. I provided like a dummy spreadsheet that you could adapt or throw away or whatever that would have the elements that we needed, sort of the employee name, ID, college, and so that we could put it into the system. Or so anyone who's added, just give me the list. We add. Anyone who's deleted, give me that list on another page or on the side. Let me know if they're enrolling or disenrolling, and then I can send it to HR. The HR wants me to check and make sure that everybody's in unit who's being sent to us. And that's my value in the process. Otherwise, I'd say just send it right to HR. But my value, apparently, is to check. And so I will do that task, because HR does so much already.
Well, just to clarify, somebody can choose to continue to pay dues of the out-of-unit.
They do, but it's not through deduct.
Okay.
So this is purely for the employee deduction portion. I have I don't care who sent you a check from, what, retirees or non-union people. Don't care. But for the employee deduction program, we need to be able to turn that on and, you know, to know who's on and who's off. And since we don't have a signed thing anymore, I need some way to enter them into the system. So this is the way that we've thought as would be as simple as possible. If you want, I can send you the email that I sent to Scott.
Can I? No, I have the email.
Oh, you have it?
And I've already talked to our volunteer. Who's
to Pat?
Also, yes, who's also a cancer survivor. It still
is,
does his work for us.
Yeah.
Yes, she is.
Okay.
Yeah. So, So I asked her, and she said the one amendment, she would be fine with the member, the signed member forms, and send that to you. This whole time, she says she actually walks them over to you. She wondered if we could email them to you. She would scan them and email them to
you. Well, the whole point of that, of 26, was to remove that obligation from the UFF. I mean, you guys fought really hard for that, so I was just trying to make it easier. And still in alignment with 26. I'm going to have to look at 26 and see if that's still possible, because I don't know that it's still possible to use the form, because Appendix B has been, my understanding is that it was deleted as part of that process. I'm happy to do what is easier for everyone, but an Excel spreadsheet where she just puts the information
in. The form, we're fine with removing the form from the contract.
Okay.
But what Pat asked is if it would still have that same information, but instead of her having to go through Excel, retyping it, and doing it, also you suggested a 2-week cadence. Like she said she would not be, that would not be possible for her. So she preferred just continuing doing this, having the signed form, and you know, instead of walking it over, possibly scanning it and emailing it to
okay.
you.
Okay. Let me look at 26 and make sure that I'm not agreeing to something without knowing, but
there
was no process set up
it.
In 26, and I didn't think about it until afterwards. I was like, oh, ye gods.
Yeah, and I think that's what I'm trying to figure out, the implementation of what was TA'd, right?
Yes.
And especially, I'm always like, well, what do we do with downtown people now, right? Mm-hmm. So if I'm...
I don't mind
maybe
electronic...
I have to become the place that people bring me their form, and then I bring them when I come to campus. It's just, as UCF expands across space and place, we don't always think about the implications of the process.
Let me be clear. I'm not objecting. I just want to make sure that I'm in compliance with the words that are there. And so I'll work with you to find a process that works. It's just a question of, we had something that I knew worked, and now it's sort of uncharted territory. So we'll figure it out.
Great. I am... let Pat and Jan
she
know that I would try to get some
Pat
clarity.
Doesn't keep a log of people coming in? Because if she did, she could just copy and paste and boom, we'd be done.
She has her system, but I'll have to ask her. Yeah,
okay.
What her
system I don't know exactly what that looks like.
I'm not
we
exactly
log,
sure what
it
looks like, yeah.
It's Pat's system.
It's
right.
Pat's
system.
It might just be
that she's
been
doing it
a
long time.
Yeah.
I'm not taking
yeah.
that away from mm-hmm. anyone. I just, I thought if she's already doing a log, then I don't want to make her type it twice, but if she wants to just copy and paste it into something
she
to send to me.
According to her, she has the forms and she sends it to UFF. She walks them over to Milliken Hall
mm-hmm.
and then she emails us. I think that's her system.
Okay.
Yeah, I think actually Scott has
the log. Yeah.
Which is our membership list.
So when she emails, he sticks it on the log.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Which is basic information, which is name and email and.
Okay.
Department.
Well, we'll figure it out offline. I don't need to take any of this bargaining time for that.
Perfect.
Simple thing.
Just
we'll just make
it.
We'll make it work somehow.
While we're on here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's why I was like, oh my gosh, we don't have a system.
Mm-hmm. We'll create a system, and I'll offer some language for this.
I'm trying to make it fair to HR too. You know, like
yeah.
they can't have a. They do everything every pay period, so that's,
It's the pay period cadence that you're referring
kind
to.
Kind of,
yes.
Okay. Yeah.
That makes sense. All
right. Because you can't deduct dues just like in the middle of, you're not going
to
do that.
Oh, she understands it. It's just that, like, to have to do it every 2
sorry.
Weeks.
Sorry. I
promised
her. Sorry.
Good. Well, thank you. I think that was
well, thank
good.
You. Thank you for another productive session.
This is a meaty article.
It is a meaty article, and we're making good progress, and I appreciate it.
It's possible then she could provide you information, and then we could reorg and have something ready for
that
TA next
perfect.
Time.
That
okay.
would be great. Thanks, guys.
As I understand it, that's the only place where we're apart.
Yeah,
oh.
on that article.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then on to 9, and then on to ratification.
Not Sherry.
I just up for grabs.
What a fun re-entry for both of you this week.
Yeah.
Did we plan this?
I really appreciate Charlie holding off the barning until I got back. That was really nice of her.
Yeah.
I think it was unintentional.
Oh.